Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packer fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Thursday. You know what that means. We are joined once again by the great Mike Wall. You can find him on Twitter at MikeWall68. Mike, thank you so much for being back. Appreciate you being here.
Hey, thanks as always for having me. Great talking ball with you.
Yeah, as always, every single week, always look forward to it. Let's start where we usually start. Packers came up with a big win this week against the Arizona Cardinals, one of their more complete games that we've seen from them in a while, arguably maybe going back to the Cowboys game last year. As you kind of watched this one, went through it, reviewed the tape, what were some of your kind of key takeaways from this one?
I just thought the defensive effort was fantastic. That's really what jumped out for me, the defensive side of the football. Obviously, limited. I thought Kyler Murray was just a monster. I think he is a monster threat. I know there's a lot of kind of body language issues and all the contract stuff, but he's a real talent. Yep. I think he threw for a little over 200 yards, but he ran for like 14 yards on 7 carries. And when I did the preview show last week, my real concern was, how do we have a rush plan for him? What are we going to do from a spy standpoint? And I just thought the defensive line did one of the better jobs of the year of making him run away from the line of scrimmage, both as he exited the pocket and then also our defensive line's kind of chase was always to the line of scrimmage, not actually towards Kyler Murray. So he had to pull up. He had to make throws with his chest facing the sideline. I thought that was a big deal. Obviously, watching those young guys play, the safety position is getting really exciting. Cooper's ready to start right now. It seems like I was just doing a little clip on him. He reminds me of John Beeson as a guy I played with in Carolina who came in like year one to replace Dan Morgan or Dan Morgan was having a lot of, had the concussion problem. And you just kind of knew that he was going to be the guy. I think Cooper's that way. And then offensively, listen, it's great to see your quarterback have a big day, four touchdowns. The one pick was on a slip, I think by Melton and, just so much talent. Again, we talked about it last week, Andy. Good God, how many open throws are there on this team? The one thing that you do have to say, though, if you're watching the game objectively, and I said this last week, what in God's name are the Arizona Cardinals doing rushing four people? They don't have a single pass rusher on their team, and they rush four guys all day, and it's like, you've got to be out of your mind. It couldn't be easier for that offensive line, Jordan Love. I mean, Matt LaFleur could call any play in the playbook, and they're going to run out of this vanilla defense and rush four people. It was astounding. The whole game was just – that part of it is baffling to me, but fun to watch.
So many things that I want to get to. We'll definitely go through those rookies in just a moment as well. I'm glad you brought up the offensive line. Their pass pro is just unbelievable at this point. And again, you're going against a four-man rush that you kind of knew. It's a no-name defense. They don't have that big-time threat. It's not like there's a Bosa out there or a Watt or something like that. Like they didn't have anyone that was going to threaten Green Bay with a four-man rush. And eventually Arizona started bringing a little bit more pressure. But anytime they brought four, Green Bay just had all day to throw. And that certainly made things easier for Jordan Love. And you saw some of those long developing plays that he was able to hit on in large part due to the pass protection of that offensive line. I thought that was a really fun aspect. Going back to Kyler Murray, he had one game against Washington where he had one carry for 3 yards, and they were down early in that game and never really got back into it, which is a huge reason why. In the other four games, 5 carries, 57 yards, 5 carries, 59 yards, 5 carries, 45 yards, and 7 carries for 83 yards and a touchdown more recently against the 49ers. He is dynamic with his legs, and limiting him to 7 carries for 14 yards, I thought was a massive takeaway in this game and a huge credit. Like, I know we'll go to the box score right away and say, oh, no, another game with no sacks. I thought what they did, just bottling in Murray and making it that he had no escape alleys and make it, I thought it was the defensive line. I thought it was the second level. There were a couple times where Bullard came across and cut off some running opportunities. I thought it was just kind of everyone rallying to the football, keeping their assignments and making sure that he couldn't get going on the ground.
Yeah, and what fans probably don't realize is there are times when you're playing against certain quarterbacks that you are going to have a rush plan, and that rush plan isn't necessarily to get to the quarterback; it's to build a wall and to force him in places he doesn't want to go. And when you look at Kyler Murray, if you just watch his body of work, when he's facing downhill, he does really well. When he faces his chest toward the sideline, really on either side of the football, he struggles. His quarterback rating goes down, a significant amount. I think you really saw it early in the first quarter when he had to roll out to the right. Carl Brooks ran to the line of scrimmage. Rashawn Gary chased him from the other side and ended up leveling him as he tried to throw a ball across his body. And really, if you know anything about the Arizona Cardinals, the game was over right then and there. Like the game's over because he's already gone to that mode. And once he goes to that mode, they usually don't come back from it. So, you know, hats off to him. I think a lot of the tracking stuff that you're talking about, maybe with Bullard and those rookies. I mean, one thing that really stands out just as a general statement as compared to the last 3 years with this new defensive coordinator is this team tackles better and they rally to the football better. Now, a couple guys, Isaiah McDuffie missed some tackles this week. I was like, oh my God, he doesn't miss tackles. He missed right. two this week. But generally speaking, these guys don't miss a lot of tackles now, certainly not compared to 2-3 years ago.
No, I couldn't agree more. And you look at that second level with, and even the third level, guys like McKinney, Williams, Bullard coming up and making those plays, Bullard playing in the slot, Nixon playing as outside corner. These are guys that are not afraid to tackle. Jair, well, once in a while, will maybe make a little bit more of a business decision, but for the most part, he's been a little bit better than maybe he was a year or two ago. And then again, those linebackers not afraid to hit either. So yeah, I think rallying to the football, the speed too at that second level. And if you kind of, I kind of think of it too when you're a nickel of having Cooper and Quay and then Bullard in the slot. Just the three guys right there that are on that second level of the defense that can fly all around the field and make some of those plays. I was in the bowl on Sunday. And you could just feel the speed that defense had flowing to the football. And there was nothing easy around there. And just going back to what you were saying a minute ago, I totally agree. When Kyler gets outside of the pocket and throwing again downfield, and when he starts making some people miss in the open field and getting that's when he starts, it almost just feels like he's building confidence. And it's like he's gained, like that's where he wants to play. And Green Bay never allowed him to get into that mode. And like you said, it was almost over that early because he never had any confidence or just rhythm throwing down the field. And then Marvin Harrison goes out, which complicates things, and he's not able to scramble around. Yeah, that's right. We were saying 31-14 with two Harrison touchdowns. We failed.
Yeah, it was a bummer. But I'll tell you what was a big deal about that game too. Just talking about what a good job Hafley's doing is. They've been running a ton of 13 personnel at the Cardinals because they want to run under center play action. They want to protect that offensive line. A lot of teams are doing this now. McVay did it 4 years ago, but we're doing it. There's a ton of teams doing it now where you're compressing everything because you want to get those crossers and you want to find space on the outside and condense that defense. And because you're running 13, the decision that Hapley made was let's go 4-3 with three traditional linebackers, put Wilson in the game to start, but put Nixon over there instead of Stokes or anybody else, make him the other corner. Obviously, Jair's going to play against their number one, and all of a sudden you've got this really, except for Jair, you've got 10 guys who really like to tackle. Yeah. And that's a whole different ball game, I think, when you talk about the Green Bay Packers and playing defense than what we've seen in years past.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's been a much more, I think, fun brand of football to see defensively than maybe some of these teams we've seen in the past. And hopefully that can kind of continue moving forward. Let's go to Jordan Love. I know you kind of brought it up already. The time that he had to throw, his ability to kind of find all different receivers in this game. He goes 22 of 32, 258, four touchdowns, one fluke interception that'll show up on the box score, but was really a fluke play. Nothing he could have done about it. 119.5 passer rating. Felt like this was the Jordan that we saw last year in rhythm, hitting throws all over the field, taking a chance here or there, but the ones that he took in this game definitely paid off. Hitting the deep ball down the field to Watson, the 4th-and-2 to Watson was a gorgeous throw to be able to get that up and over the linebacker. Thoughts on Jordan in this game?
Jordan played great. I think he threw to 10 receivers, and I think we had 10 receivers that had receptions, and we had 7 people running the football.
Yeah.
And so we talk about Jordan, but talk about, again, Coach LaFleur and what a job they're doing creating opportunities for so many different people. And you just think about it's hard to conceptualize without watching tape what that does to a defense. But if you're wondering why Arizona's rushing 4 and playing vanilla, well, that's why, because they're lining up Jaden Reed in the backfield half the time. Then they put Bo Melton back. It's like you don't know what to do. Jordan Love is he's a supremely talented football player. And he has these games where you go, oh yeah, he's going to be a top 5 guy. And he makes these throws his first touch on Romeo Doubs was, it might have been a little bit off timing, but what a throw, to get him open. And then the second one, that's a Brett Favre throw that you love that he's thrown it, because you can't score if you don't try.
Yep.
But you know, your receiver has to make your look good. And you got to make those throws sometimes as being part of the National Football League. If you want to be a good player, you got to give your receivers time to make play. I think the most impressive throw he made of the day, though, was that fourth and two over the center to over the middle to Watson. He had to clear those two linebackers. That was, we talked about window throws last week, and that was one of the few window throws he actually has had to make, and it was absolutely perfect. It's as a former player and just the guy who just analyzes this stuff now, as you really want to compliment Jordan Love because it's such a hard position to play, but I can't get over how easy the play calling is making the game look and how many different, I mean, I played for 11 years. I've been around this league since 1998. I'll be damned if I've ever heard of a team have 10 receivers and 7 rushers in the same game. I've never heard of that.
No, I mean, we saw it too. Like even when Malik Willis was out there, especially in the second game with Malik, like this is a quarterback they just got and Matt's still finding ways to find open throws for Malik Willis. So it's not to take anything away from Jordan. You still have to go out and execute. And he did so at a high level in this game, but the way that Matt is able to find and get wide receivers open and stack plays on top of plays that make it look one way, but it's actually something totally different. And then to your point, and I talked about this a little bit with Paul Breddle yesterday, just, you know, guys like Andrew Beck playing 7 snaps in this game. And like, he has a role carved out for him. He's a practice squad call up. I mean, a lot of teams I think would just be like, all right, we'll call him up from the practice squad. You're going to go play teams. You know, we're probably not going to get you ingrained. No, Matt knows that there are 7 plays that they can utilize his specific skill set. He's going to get him in there for those 7 plays, more of the H-back fullback type of role. You know, you see Ben Sims, and I think Ben Sims even has more to give to this offense. I think we saw a little bit of it this week when he gets up the field, and this may be one of Jordan's only poor throws of the day where he underthrows it a little bit, but Sims goes down and plucks it and gets upfield. It could have been even a bigger play on that one. And, you know, you're seeing all of these different types of players, and I give Gutekunst credit for, you know, getting all different shapes, sizes of running backs, wide receivers, tight ends that can all do a little bit of something different. But Matt knows how to use every single one of those pieces in the right moment. And I have to think, like, you have 6 receivers that are playing 10 plus snaps in this game. I got to think, is if you're a 5th or 6th wide receiver or a H-back fullback getting called off the practice squad, just knowing that, hey, I'm still going to have a role in this game. And if it might be 7 plays, it might be 12, it might be 2 or 3, but I'm going to have the opportunity to go out and make a play. And I know Jordan's going to spread the ball around. Man, I have to think that that's going to keep you a little extra motivated in the week and in the game to go out and put your best foot forward. Hey friends, week 6 is officially in the books. And can we just talk for a second about how ridiculous the NFC North is? What an absolute tear this division is on. 3 more wins this week. Detroit, Green Bay, Chicago, all pickup wins. Of course, Minnesota had to buy. But that's not the only winning that's going on. You need to be doing your winning over at Prize Picks. And Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action. And you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. And when you do sign up, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It is guaranteed. So make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm sticking with the NFC North. I'm going with Amon-Ra St. Brown versus Minnesota. I'm going with Justin Jefferson against Detroit. And of course, I'm going with Josh Jacobs against Houston. There are plenty of options to choose from, but just remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game. And that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are 2 tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, 2 tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
Oh, no doubt. You're actually going to practice fighting for reps.
Yeah.
That breeds a whole new, I think, level of competitiveness and certainly accountability and attention to detail when you're in the study phase or the preparation phase. You go back and you just look at like Mike Shanahan's offense back in the day, Tiger personnel, two tight ends, like what's old is new again. And I love that. I mean, just as an offensive lineman, this is such a friendly, I can't explain how friendly an offense this is for an offensive lineman. And I'm saying that knowing that, there's teams in the league that are still running shotgun, dropping back 60 times a game, 50 times a game. And you just go, man, this couldn't be more fun to play in, more fun to watch, more opportunities for so many different people. There's, you know, this is one of those offenses that there's so many contracts that are going to be enhanced, you know, talking about the sixth or seventh guy in the room all the way to the top because of the way that they're distributing the ball. And again, I don't want to minimize Jordan Love is doing a really good job of understanding what the concept is, understanding what the priority is, making the right reads. But the way they do, I mean, the details and how they just do little motions, and a lot of teams are doing this now, but little motions just to either identify what the coverage is or to just move somebody a little bit so we can get a better release. It's really, really impressive. And I feel like even when I'm watching the game and I'll watch it again, and with a lot of these different teams with these offenses, the structure of the offenses are similar to the last 20, 30, 40 years. But I'm learning something new every day as far as understanding how to manipulate specific parts of the defense, whether it's with a shift, whether it's a motion, go to the backfield, and what they're trying to. I mean, because a lot of this is like new for everyone, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, these tiny manipulations and the eye candy and the motions and just to get a defender to take one false step to set up somebody somewhere else. And even the stuff that Matt bakes in to show one thing over and over and over throughout the course of the game, just so later he's going to play upon, your tendency to go exactly towards what he's shown you three other times. Now he's going to pull it and do something totally different. Yeah, he came into Green Bay saying, we have this illusion of complexity. It feels like the complexity has gotten higher. The illusions have gotten more grand. And we are seeing defenses just with head spinning, being like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And to your point from earlier, wide receivers sitting open and having opportunities to make plays. And I think, too, the cool thing in this one, and I can't say that I specifically saw anything necessarily different. I don't know, maybe you did. But I do think at some point teams are going to start maybe keying a little bit more on Jaden Reed. One, just getting him in the backfield and using him in different ways to not keep him in one specific spot, I think is going to be huge. But just to get guys like Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs back, and it's like, all right, if you want to key on Jaden Reed or any other guy, we've got three or four other guys, maybe even more than that, that can also win, and we'll just get it to those guys on that particular play.
Yeah, and so one of the reasons that so Jaden Reed goes in the backfield, and so just so your listeners, anytime you put a receiver in the backfield, whoever, if they're playing man, if they're playing zone, they don't really know where to line up. Like it gives them a real count problem because the way, we count from outside in, if we're talking about the defense, and they don't know how to count him all of a sudden. So that creates issues. If he goes across the ball, it creates issues. Now, if you put him in the backfield for the one play, and then you put him out wide and you put Melton in the backfield, well, now you got a real problem because how are we structuring this? Are we basing it on Jaden Reed, like you just suggested, or are we basing it on the position of any receiver going? So there's so many things. And this used to happen actually back in the day in college football. You'd see Notre Dame doing this all the time. They'd be blowing somebody out. Nick Saban would do this at Alabama. Be blowing somebody out, and then they'd put some bastard formation out there, or they'd run like a sneak and on a fourth and six punt or something. And they're just trying to get you to spend an extra hour thinking about that and not what, really how to stop the outside zone. And that's what is kind of, higher level is so much fun to watch about this stuff is you can see the mental gymnastics that the D coordinator must have to go through every week.
Oh yeah, he'll throw stuff out there. Just again, I think to put things in the mind of defensive coordinators for future weeks too, which is again, he's just at a totally different level right now, and it's really fun to watch. I know we brought up some of these rookies already, and we can go either lightning round through this, or you can, you know, say one thing or multiple things, wherever you want to go. I want to go through four of these rookies that I think are really getting a big opportunity right now. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball with Jordan Morgan. He just got reintegrated into the offense. He rotating once again with Sean Ryan. Matt didn't mince words on Monday about, you know, it looked like he was rusty, looked like it was his first game back in a while, a lot of things that he could improve upon. What were your thoughts on Jordan Morgan in this game?
Yeah, I thought it was a mistake to play him. I said that last week, the week before. Sean Ryan, unfortunately, last week didn't play very well. I just don't think it helps the offense. Now, you got to remember that the Packers got like 180 yards on the ground or something, 170 some odd yards on the ground. But they're not running the football in traditional sense very well. They have these plays. They have a couple chunk plays for Emmanuel Wilson, but you know your main guy is really not getting the yardage or the yards per carry that you'd expect.
Yep.
And so why does that happen? Well, that happens because the interior of the offensive line isn't getting the movement that they want with the consistency that they desire. And a large part of that this week was because Jordan Morgan doesn't play as physical as he needs to. Part of that's because he's a rookie. Part of that's because he's a tackle from a footwork standpoint, leverage standpoint, all of those things. But I just don't. You know, I've said it before. I just don't know what the benefit is of trying to learn on the job. You know, I think you know, once you decide on somebody, you have to be able to move forward. I didn't think he played very well. Now, if Myers is out for a long time and they have to rotate in, certainly Jenkins is the best person to play center because you've had two right guards, and having two guys with any experience is better than having somebody without experience. But yeah, I thought it was a mistake to rotate them, and I don't think that. He's certainly going to get better, but and listen, we've all struggled. Anybody who's played the position has struggled. It's a tough position to play, but you know that wasn't a world-beating pair of defensive tackles, and he got bullied around a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely a learning game for Jordan Morgan, and I think that they have obviously a lot of faith in him. Spent a first-round pick on him, and I know Adam Stenovich last week said that they wanted to get him right back in green because of how good they think he can be, but. There was definitely some learning moments in this one, and we'll see if they kind of continue that. My guess is they do. I think they're probably going to continue to rotate that spot. I like the way that Sean Ryan is playing outside of, like you mentioned, the last game prior to this one where had a little bit of an issue. Again, we talked about last week there may have been a little bit of an injury earlier in that game, but either way, I still like where Sean Ryan is headed, but they obviously have a lot of faith in Jordan Morgan and continuing to develop him as part of their plan, and my guess is we see it moving forward, but he'll need to take some of those lessons from this past game and kind of utilize them moving forward. Let's go to Javon Bullard being utilized both at safety and in the slot. I'll be honest, I had some reservations initially about maybe Bullard playing this much in the slot. I always thought there could be a package or a series of plays that they could utilize him, but they really put him primarily in the slot these past two games. He's responded well. Not exactly dynamic slot receivers these past couple of weeks. Tank Dell coming to town this week, a little bit different, but what were your thoughts on Bullard in the slot so far?
Loved him the last 2 weeks. I think the closer to the line of scrimmage he plays, the better. He's just that kind of personality. I don't know if he's that kind of body type necessarily. I think he can play anywhere. I think he's very unique in that sense, but the personality that he has, I think he's a damn scud missile, man. You launch him out of the back of your trunk and see where it lands. You know, that guy's going for blood. I love the way he plays. I love his presence. To your point, Tank Dell's coming in. Now, the Texans we can talk about later, but, you know, even with Nico Collins out there, they have an embarrassment of riches on the offensive side. So do they have to do some things differently? If you want to play any kind of man coverage, you're probably going to have to think about that. But I'm firmly of the belief that Bullard, Williams, and obviously Xavier are three integral pieces of this defense, and you have to find a way to get them on the field as often as possible. Now, who suffers when you go into 4-3? That's conversation for another story. But as long as you're running nickel, those three aren't on the field, I just think you're doing yourself a disservice. And let's not forget, he's played the star position before in college. This is nothing new to him.
No, very much so. And I think if you are going zone heavy, he can easily play that spot heavy. And again, we saw what he's capable of coming off the edge, the run stops that he has in the backfield. Now, I've been very pleasantly surprised the way that he has held up there. And again, I just think it gives Jeff Hafley a lot of different tools in his toolbox to utilize depending on what situation and scenarios they're going with. But you hit the nail right on the head of your three of your best players on the defense are McKinney, Bullard, and Williams. So figure it out, get them on the field in any way possible. And so far these last couple of weeks, that has worked out well for them. Let's move over to Evan Williams, who in my opinion has been like a game changer on this defense in the 2 weeks that he's been in, at safety and primarily playing that spot. He's got the ball skills. He takes great angles to the football. Had the peanut punch this past week to stop on Kyler Murray in the backfield. Like, he's been everywhere, and it is like he doesn't look like a rookie out there. It looks like he's been playing for 4 or 5 years.
No, I mean, these guys coming out of big time ball, you know, these huge programs. I think, he came out of Oregon. And you just think to yourself, these kids, some of these kids are coming in extremely immature, and some of these kids are coming in mature beyond the years. I think this might go down. I said this on my show, like, Jordan Morgan aside, this might go down as the best defensive, be at least defensive draft class that you've had in generation. I mean, these guys are unbelievable how ready to play they are. And they all popped off the screen in college, but you go, yeah, of course they did. Evan Williams looks like a bulldog, man. He's an absolute unit. The guy loves contact. He's very aggressive to the ball. He has a ton of confidence. You just see the way that, even on this, watching the All-22 tape, like the way that these guys jump off the screen from a presence standpoint is just like, they're on the field. And I won't call out some other names on the team to demean them, but there's some players on this team and on other teams where you don't even know if they're in the game or not. Like, every time, every snap these guys are playing, they make themselves known. And from an area of opportunity for the last 3 years at the safety position or the secondary in general, to what you have now, and literally the transformation has taken a calendar month. It's just unbelievable what a difference not only the coordinator makes, but what a difference just a draft class like this makes. Because I think those two guys in particular, I don't know that you could have drafted better positioned players for what they're asked to do in this defense.
No, one of the biggest things come draft time that goes completely under the radar by a lot of people, not everyone, but is the talent mixed with the scheme, and is it a fit? Is it the right fit in the right system for the right player? And I just thought they did a tremendous job with Evan Williams, Javon Bullard, and Edgerton Cooper finding players that perfectly fit this Jeff Hafley defense, and you're seeing it, and they're able to find ways to utilize those guys. And I'm with you. I think in a month's time, basically, whatever it's been, the impact that these three have made on this defense already, it is noticeable. It flashes off the tape, and I think it's only going to get better from here, especially if they continue to improve. I could not be more excited about these three defenders and what they could potentially mean long-term for this team.
Yeah, no doubt. The only thing I would say is I would have thought Bullard and Williams kind of switched positions, meaning that I thought they would play Williams closer to the line of scrimmage when they first got here. But pleasantly, I didn't spend too much time thinking about it. But boy, both those guys can really play ball. And unlike Cooper, who I think is ready to start in this league, and I think he's a special player. And you see the difference in play and attacking the line of scrimmage that he has versus some other players, and which is astounding, right? It just jumps off the page. But unlike Cooper, these two guys are purpose built for the positions. They're not too small. They're not too, there's nothing like physically, they have everything you possibly want. Not falling out of the first round or second round of the draft. And man, there's some gems, real gems.
Yeah, we've touched base on Edgerton Cooper quite a bit already, so I don't know if there's anything else to add. But again, just some of the plays that he is making. There's the play where there's an offensive line in front of him, and the running back could either go left or right, and the running back cuts back, and Cooper is right there to meet him in the hole. Just did some really, really fun things. There's another open field tackle that he made. It's just the mistakes for a rookie are very, very few. There have been a couple of misalignment issues, one that Matt called out in week one. There was one last week where he's a little bit late aligning, but overall, once that ball is snapped, he's a heat-seeking missile. He's got the speed. He's got the intensity, the right demeanor, like you mentioned. He just looks like the total package at linebacker, something that they've been desperately wanting at that position for a while.
I think the maybe the best play to talk about is the first one you referenced. So there's a couple of things that happened there that you just don't see last year or the year before. You don't see with Quay last year or the year before, quite frankly. And the first thing is Carl Brooks splits the double team, which we used to not get. So Carl splits the double, which basically means that the guard can't get up to Cooper because Cooper plays much faster to the line of scrimmage than his predecessor or his partner in crime. And then Enik Bari stands up the tight end and gets him a yard in the backfield. And so those guys do the dirty work that doesn't go on the stat sheet. They make the play. But then Cooper and glory go to the guy who makes the tackle, because he attacks the line of scrimmage, he plays peekaboo, and then gets back. And again, either it was a tackle for loss or a 0 yard gain, but the intensity of which he's going to the line of scrimmage, and the first step is always to the ball, we're never going back. We're always to the ball. And those things are, I think, more natural to some players than others. Now, I would say this, because I know this, you compare it to Quay. He's a much more natural football player than Quay Walker is.
Yep.
And that's not a negative thing about Quay. That's a compliment to what a great player this kid's going to be. But you don't see the need. Now, they put him on a lot of stunts because he had a rush on the running back that you went, holy shit. I mean, the running back was grasping air. But you don't have to send him through the A gap because he's going to go anyways. As soon as he sees it, he's going to trigger, right? Where you got to send Quay, which I think is a good thing for him. Yep. And I think it's helped him play more aggressively. And there was a great play by Quay this week where Kenny Clark got some penetration against the right guard. And the center tried to come up. He still had his shoulders turned. Quay jammed him at the line of scrimmage, came off and made the play. It was probably the best I've ever seen him do. So he's getting a lot better at that stuff, which is important. But you can tell that he's taking the lead from McDuffie and Cooper, right? Which begs the question, how much longer is Cooper on the sideline?
Yeah, it seems like he has to be playable at this point. I know this is the most snaps he's gotten so far. He outsnapped Isaiah McDuffie for the first time this week. It just feels like that number is going to continue to go up to the point where he can't really take that guy off the field anymore. And that blitz, by the way, that you mentioned, he went right past the running back, and it's just unfortunate the quarterback, or Murray in this case, got rid of the ball, I think, instantaneously, basically. Otherwise, that was going to be a highlight reel sack for Edrian Cooper on that one.
I like the way that Halfley's using packages by personnel. So, like, you start the game, you've got McDuffie, Quay, and Wilson in the game. Wilson's been playing really well, by the way.
Yeah.
Real physical player. So you've got those guys because, quite frankly, is Cooper the guy that you want when they're running 13 personnel, like a real 13, and they're trying to run the ball? Of those four guys, maybe he's the third or the third or fourth guy you want in there just from a size standpoint, because if you're double teaming, it makes it a little bit harder. But then, you get anything else, it's like now we have a package where you've got two really athletic linebackers that can do pretty much do it all, and he can run around any block we've seen so far and still get to the line of scrimmage. So, again, I just masterful job by Halfley and using that personnel. I've never you don't usually think of a team as having the depth that you can use this many players in this many ways.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's fun to see Jeff Halfley with all those pieces and what he's able to do and utilizing all of them, very similar to what Matt's doing on the offensive side with all the offensive pieces. You brought up Carl Brooks. I wanted to ask you, he obviously made that gorgeous play on the screen pass where he identifies the screen, gets back there, knocks out the ball and recovers it. Huge play by him. I also want to ask you just in general, like what makes a great screenplay from an offensive lineman? Like how are you able to get the player to suck in enough to then, get them, go around them and get upfield and make those blocks where they don't have the tell or the ability to see like Carl Brooks did on this play? Oh, they're clearly running screen. Like what makes a great screenplay?
So there's a bunch of different things. So first of all, you have to identify if it's man or zone. So that's kind of the biggest thing you have to figure out, because if it's man, there's a guy tied to that running back. And everybody else has their back turned to you. So if you can get if you can get that one person, that's kind of the easiest thing. So first man out has to identify if it's man or zone. If it's zone, then you got your eyes peeling a little bit more. If you're talking about the rush, the biggest thing you still see in football in the NFL, it's just dumbfounding, is like Flanagan and I, for example, if it was a screen to the right and there was a shade, I would say me, me, me. And he would get the hell out of the way, because you don't want to double team a guy, because a double team guy is going to stop rushing, right? And so it's just little things. You see that all the time now where guys are still double teaming the nose tackle and he doesn't go anywhere. And it's like, well, yeah, of course he doesn't go anywhere, because you can't rush against four hands. So right. There's little details like that. But I think if just when you're talking in general, identifying the coverage, and that's why you see a lot of motions right now with LaFleur's offense pre-snap on the screen stuff. And then he's doing a really good job by tendency. So they're understanding, if we go into two guys in the backfield and we motion out the backside guy, they've been sending this linebacker. Okay, when they send this linebacker, we know their software on the left, so the other linebacker is going to drop to the middle. We run a screen game. It's like 69 out the door. So that kind of stuff, I think, from a play call and Sam Wright, they're doing a really good job of identifying let's call these plays in situations where they have tendencies to run blitz.
Gotcha. No, that makes a ton of sense. And I really like, that's really smart. I never really thought of it from a double team standpoint of, yeah, you often you see the double team and all of a sudden that defensive tackle is just looking to get arms up or starting to identify the running back and some of those sort of things. And I'm sure, yeah, they're not getting upfield because they don't feel like they're going to be able to get that pressure anyway. So that's really smart. I never thought of it that way. Couple other things just real quick before we get out of here. Packers, Texans, what are you looking for in this one?
This is going to be a fun game. They're very similar teams, actually. If you look at personnel, so even without Nico Collins, I said before, Texans from a skill position standpoint, talk about Stephon Diggs, Dank Dell, Dalton Schultz, Damon Pierce, Joe Mixon. I mean, oh, CJ Stroud, like probably the best rookie season of anybody in the last generation. So, I mean, they are just out of your mind talented. CJ Stroud is, for me, you know, you don't want to say top three. I don't know how many guys like I would pick over him. He's unbelievable. I mean, I watch these guys every week. He's unbelievably good. Their offensive line is, they've got 3 first round picks, a second round center. I mean, they've got dudes all over. They can pass protect. They've done a really good job running the ball. Mixon was the leading rusher before he got hurt. He came back. They had 170 yards last week. Nico was the leading receiver before he got hurt. So they've lost some guys, and you know, that part of it, I think they're still struggling to be around the middle of the pack, 14th or 15th in kind of total points, but they're, I think, top 5 or 6 in total yards. Defensively, like, same thing. They've been drafting for a while. Like, they weren't good for a little bit when O'Brien was running the show. So they've got all these draft picks, like first and second round picks in the secondary. A couple guys are hurt there. Will Anderson is unbelievable effort. Like, he's a guy that, like, he's a guy that Lucas Van Ness should be watching. Because, yeah, you know, you kind of look and go, okay, you want to talk about real intensity and just understanding, like, I don't need this crazy, you know, hand chop club rip, all this stuff to have a good pass rush plan. I can just win with finding edges, finding leverage, being relentless, and just getting, you know, 1 or 2% better. Like, that's the guy you want to look at. They obviously brought over Danielle Hunter from the Vikings. We know him. He's a problem. I really like their linebackers, starting with Neville Hewitt. When they bring in the 4-3, he's an absolute hammer. They have Aziz, who's their team captain, a really, really good player. And then Tua Tua is a really, really good, fun player to watch. A guy who's a real good instinctive run stopper, has a nose for the ball and likes to shoot gaps. So, like, I'm a huge fan of this team. What will be interesting is they are not afraid to run man coverage in their secondary, even with injured guys, because they want to bring pressure. So with the stuff that Matt LaFleur has been dialing up, and the receivers that we have at our disposal, being the Packers, how does man coverage work against that group? Because when you watch the sideline copy of the Texans, it's like you've got 10 people within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage and then one dude 25 yards back. And so there's a hell of a lot of space to do some damage. And even the Patriots last week, you know, they caught some guys kind of looking in the backfield and had some plays. But this could be – I think the Packers are favored by 2 or 3 points, and that feels about right. But I wouldn't be surprised if this game's in the 30s, man, for one team or the other, because there's just it's tough to describe. And Jordan Love's a good quarterback. It's tough to put into words how good CJ Stroud is.
He's special. There's no two ways around it. He's absolutely special. They were my preseason Super Bowl pick in large part because of what he is capable of. They do have some injuries right now, the Nico Collins one being the big one. They're a little bit beat up in the secondary. I really like Kalen Bullock is somebody as a rookie safety who's playing some good football. And then Jalen Petrie, yep, is always somebody I enjoy watching play as well. Yeah. They this is just going to be, this is one of those games where there's just talent on the field everywhere, on the offensive side, on the defensive side for both teams. It is just going to be like matchup after matchup. This is a game where it's going to come down to who makes the fewest mistakes. And I think just like what you were mentioning, Houston wanting to go man and blitzing on certain plays, but Green Bay having all the tools needed to beat that style of defense. Like, the styles make fights, right? This is an awesome, yep, fight with a ton of talent. This is like, you know, your main event UFC stuff. Like, I'm very much looking forward to this one.
Yeah, it's going to be a monster game. I just did a breakdown on this, and there's just so many formational and personnel tendencies that you can kind of look at and cross-eyed and go, okay, how are you going to defend this? What is this positional player going to do when he gets this matchup? It's going to be a real fun game to watch. I'll say this. I think that we're fortunate. Like, Malik Collins went to San Francisco, and he was a game wrecker inside a defensive tackle. Yeah. Of course, what's his name just went up to 58, just went up to Minnesota. We just saw him a couple.
Jonathan Grenner.
Yeah. And there's a great story, by the way. So that guy started out as like a nobody practice squad guy, yeah. Right? And I watch their practice tape all the time, and I'm telling one of their guys, I'm like, listen, this kid, you need to just, I don't know what you need to do. He needs to go against you every day, because this kid just works and works and works. And you just saw him getting better. Literally, you could watch him getting better every single day and week. And then he just gets a monster contract, even though it's for the wrong team up in the NFC North. You can't be, got to be happy for him. But yep. I'll say this. I do think that our tackles, as good as their defensive ends are, our tackles, like, that's the matchup that you want. And I do think that you can exploit maybe some of the interior offensive linemen with the pass rush. And I think you can also exploit running games against their offensive line, particularly on the interior, if we're talking about Packers D versus Texan offense. So I think there's some line of scrimmage matchups that might determine this game, because if you can't run the football, if you're Houston, a lot of your stuff doesn't work. CJ Stroud likes to hold the ball and does a lot of off-schedule stuff. So trying to figure that all out really starts with stopping the run and stopping both the two-headed monster at running back. So if we can do that, I think it could be a long day for them offensively, but the opposite is true.
Got to eat your vegetables early, stop the run, getting some of those third and longs and getting to maybe some of those exotic blitz looks, which we know Jeff Hafley has in his bag. Really, really quick, Aiden Hutchinson out for the year. How much does this affect the NFC North and the Detroit Lions?
Well, obviously he's a fantastic player, and I think he's the game plan guy on that team. They have McNeil's a good player on their on the defensive line as well. But he's a special guy. He seems to be the thunderbolt for their team as well on the defensive side. But I just think that you just saw what they did against Dallas. The level that they're playing at is far higher than their peer group right now, and as well as Minnesota. Looks as well as Green Bay starting to kind of really build momentum here. I think Detroit right now, as of today, is a little bit higher up on the totem pole than those two teams. And the way that the belief that they it's amazing to see in this day and age with all the spotlight on these different, Robert Saleh, the coach, Jerry Jones, and the owner, to see the love that they have for Dan Campbell and the relationship that team has with each other is. Man, it's like my best friend lives in outside of Detroit, and he's lived there his whole life. And he said, they've never had such pride as they do in Michigan for the Detroit Lions. And Dan Campbell could walk into any restaurant, bar, car dealership. He is literally the king of Michigan right now. So yeah, they're doing a lot right.
No, they very much are. Last but not least, you're playing for Dan Campbell. Ben Johnson says, Mike, we want a hook and lateral to you. We're going to get you a touch. How are you wanting the hook and lateral as an offensive lineman? Are you like, nope, do you give it to somebody else? Are you asking for the ball in that situation? What do you want?
Are you asking me if I'm going to shy away from it? No, I'm not going to shy away from that. I'll take it. Absolutely. I tell you what, I want to be the lateral. I don't want to be the hook. I know that.
Yes. Yeah. You want to be the guy.
Listen, I consider myself the fastest guy on our line. I think that's true. Chad was pretty fast. I think I was faster than he was. So I think I'd be the lateral guy. I don't look like Penei Sewell though. Oh my God. Imagine him running at you.
We got to see Philly run this with Jordan Mailata, the former rugby player. At some point they got to get the ball in that guy's head. I just want to see what he can do with it, because he was a beast playing rugby. I want to see that in Philly at some point.
6'9", it's just tough to even imagine. Like 6'9", to me sounds like it's too tall, like you should just chop him down. But if you watch his tape, it's like, you he's chop him down, Andy. I don't want to do it.
Yeah, exactly, right? Oh, Mike, this is awesome as always. Of course, make sure to find Mike on the On My Block podcast as well as the Block Party podcast. You can find him on Twitter, MikeWall68. Mike, plug anything you want to get on before we get out of here.
That's it, man.
All right, make sure to give him a follow. It is the absolute best tape work that you are going to find anywhere every single week. So make sure to go check out his podcast on YouTube. You can find him again at MikeWall68. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That does it for Mike and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.